All right, everybody, let's finish this picture.
If he was certain that the show would fail, a man could make a fortune.
Perfect. Do you know anything about film productions?
Extraordinary shot.
Welcome to Movie Land.
CJ Johnson brings you the latest on the art, practice, and commerce in the film industry.
I got an idea for a movie.
On ABC Local Radio.
Hey, wait, is this the original opening?
Hello and welcome to another episode of Movie Land. I'm CJ Johnson. Thanks for joining me again. This year, the Sydney Film Festival had as its tagline, "Together in the Dark, we share our stories." And my guest's film had its premiere at the Sydney Film Festival. And it really summed up that idea, that tagline of the festival, I thought, because it is a real example of personal cinema, and it is a real, true example of sharing one's stories. My guest is Sophia Turkovich. Her film is called Once My Mother. It is opening around the country on the 24th of July, and she joins me on Movie Land. Hi, Sophia.
Hi, CJ.
So, essentially, Once My Mother is kind of your third film, if I've got it right, about your mother. You've sort of telescoped your filmmaking to this most personal version of essentially her story.
Exactly. I see that there is this connection between a student film that I made called Letters from Poland in 1978. Then once I graduated, I made a film called Silver City. Both of those were dramas. And now Once My Mother, I see as a companion piece to both of those films and a continuation. And what I tell myself is that this time I hope that I've got it right.
So your mother's story obviously is inherently dramatic, in that you've given it this short film, this dramatic treatment, and now this documentary treatment, which is, I mean, a documentary can be a lot of things, but really this is an intimate portrait of a person and of a relationship, being your relationship.
Yes. I think to me, when I say documentary, in a way, I feel I always, when I was pitching it, was thinking of it as a sort of poetic documentary. But when you pitch it in that way, it sounds really wanky. I hope that that's the sort of feel of the finished film. That's how I feel about it myself, that it's not an obvious sort of documentary or a memoir. In a way, it's, you know, people write memoirs. I've made a film that's essentially a memoir.
Oh, definitely. In fact, it doesn't feel at all like a traditional documentary at all. It feels like an exploratory sort of essay or memoir.
Well, my mother was one of the almost 2 million Poles who was deported to Siberia during the Second World War. It's a story that's virtually unknown in the West. So that's the background to the story. But at the heart of it is an exploration of a very troublesome mother-daughter relationship, which is what my own relationship was with my mother.
And it sort of takes that relationship and puts it against or in the context of her literally huge journey from Poland to Siberia to Adelaide via a whole bunch of other places around the world, including some very long walks along the way and some long treks.
Yes, because not only was my mother deported to Siberia, but she was also released along with hundreds of thousands of other Poles, but released in a way that involved this incredible exodus with no money, no resources, nothing. They were just literally told to, first of all, get themselves to the Volga Basin area of the Soviet Union to actually be part of a Polish army that was being formed. I tell that story in the film, but subsequently it was realised that meeting point was just too cold. It was winter. All these emaciated refugees who just walked out of the gulags were dying. So then they had to be moved to a warmer climate, and ended up doing this incredible walk to Tashkent, or not only Tashkent, but there were other little bases around in Uzbekistan near Tashkent. And then from there they were transported to what was then Persia, and from there my mother ended up in Africa in a refugee camp, which is where I was born, and then we came out to Australia. So it is amazing when you look at her, she just looks like this ordinary, uneducated migrant woman that you might see in the street or be living next door somewhere. When you start talking and hear her story, it is absolutely unbelievable.
And it tells you that all those little old migrant women that you do live next door to and see in the street all have stories.
Exactly. In fact, there are thousands of Polish families living all over Australia who also went through that experience. So, you know, like it's not just unique to my mother. There's lots of Poles who, when you talk to them, will tell you about their own experience, just as tragic, just as incredible.
So to keep it as a personal story, you put yourself in the film. It's sort of pretty much is framed by you and your mother in the present of the film's time scale. And you also add a narration which is spoken by an actress but is very much your voice, but it's spoken to your mother. So instead of speaking to the audience and saying, then my mother did this, then my mother did that, what you say is, then you did this, then you did that, which is a narrative technique I can't recall hearing before.
The hardest thing was actually to find the voice. Mm-hmm. I was struggling and struggling. Prior to that, I thought that I was making a film just about my mother. I knew that I was going to be in it somehow, but I had no idea to, you know, what extent. And gradually I realised that it really, at the heart of it, was a mother-daughter relationship. And so I had to be in it because it was the impulse behind it really was me trying to unravel this complicated relationship that I had. So once I realised I had to be a pretty important character in the story, not just, say, a narrator, I kept thinking, just struggling with how I was going to present myself as a character. This took months and months. I had no idea how I was going to sort of come into the story and tackle this whole narrative. At this point, I'd got Denise Haslam on board as my editor, and I can remember one day she was just there trying to get a rough cut. We just had miles of material that we had to shape into some sort of a rough cut. And while she was doing that, I went upstairs to the attic and just sat down to write the first sort of bit of narrative. The first lines that have stayed right through to, you know, the completion of the film just came to me. And as soon as I had those lines, that was the voice I'd been looking for.
What were those lines?
The lines start with like a direct statement to her. It's, I'm losing you. I'm losing the woman who was once my mother, which is where the title come from as well. And as soon as I heard that in my own head, I was away. From that point on, it just flowed. It was this conversation that I was having with my mother, because it was at the point where I saw that her mental health was deteriorating. She was forgetting who I was. And so those words just came out that, you know, I could see this loss that I was going to experience more and more as I lost her.
It actually, those lines actually said, and maybe this is just because there are quite a few people in my life that have had dementia, or I'm dealing with now, who have dementia, that I actually thought that your mother was going to be suffering much more from dementia than was at all apparent in the film, if at all. Like, in the film, she's actually incredibly copus mentis.
Right. We had, there were times when she was completely lucid and then other times she wasn't. So we had to, you know, sort of work around that. And there was a whole lot of filming and a whole lot of repetition. and I possibly could have just given more of a sense of her.
Well, it's not a film about dementia, is it? It's a film about her story and about her life.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Why did you choose to hire an actress to speak the narration?
Well, when I heard this voice in my head, I found that I couldn't actually reproduce it because I'm not an actor.
I have no doubt that Jenna Valutic?
Jen Valetic, yes.
Valetic. I have no doubt that having been with you, that she is doing you to a certain degree, that the way she delivers your written narration is how you would sound if you felt up to it. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, well, I'm pleased that you've said that, because we spent a lot of time. She was listening to my phrasing and the tone of my voice and was trying to reproduce it. So we did work a lot on that aspect of it. And I have to say, I did at one point think to hide her credit, because I wanted people to believe it was me.
That's interesting, though. So you That makes so much sense to me now, because she is so clearly sort of doing almost your voice, your literal voice, that I see she was actually playing you in a sense. Oh, that's terrific. That's, again, that's a very unique sort of methodology. Now,
And just on that point, I was working with Rod Friedman, who's my producer, and he had trouble with that concept. And I think this is the only documentary I've made. All my background's been in drama.
Yeah.
And I think I was bringing my drama sort of skills into this. And he was saying, it's not going to work. This is a documentary. But he's very happy with the end result and surprised at how effective it was.
Well, it fooled me. I was sure it was you. And I've only met you once before, but you know, you've got quite a distinctive voice, and I was sure it was you completely. And then I saw the credit at the end, and I was like, well, there you go. I was wrong. So, you know, you've got this lovely, intimate stuff of you and your mother in the present day. And then we've got her epic journey. And essentially, to tell that story, which is the story of the war, or is one aspect of the war, you use all sorts of found footage. Tell us about that footage and how you came across it and chose it and what you dealt with in terms of using that artistically.
Right. Well, there's quite a lot of archival material to tell that historical part of the story. When I first started researching, I was still teaching at the film school in 2007, and I went over to London on a trip at the time, and it was the very first day of my formal research, archival research. I went to the Sikorsky Museum in London. That had been the Polish government in exile office, and then after the war, it was just kept as it had all the memorabilia, and basically it's just kept by a few old guys who were, you know, part of that army. No resources, no database at the time, just all this incredible stuff. I was asking about visual material and was shown this can of film and told that it had been shot in Africa in the camp that I was born in, that my mother lived for 6 years of her life.
Wow.
But they had no facilities to show me. Yeah. And in fact, they were just getting to the point of going to be digitising all this material, which then took a year. And I had to wait a year for this. Finally, a year later, a DVD arrived with all these rushes from the footage from this British Pathé film crew who had gone to the Lusaka Polish refugee camp in what was then Northern Rhodesia, which was amazing in itself, because there were 20 different refugee camps in Africa and as many in India, where Polish people who'd come out of Siberia were living. And our particular camp was one of the small ones. It was not an obvious one. And for some reason, this British Pathé crew turned up in our camp and shot footage of people getting off the trains, as you saw, and walking into the huts and building the huts to be the refugee camp. That was day one of my archival research.
Wow. So you kind of hit the jackpot on day one, but then you had to wait a year to see it.
Exactly.
Why were they there in the first place? Was that footage ultimately intended for movie-tone news, or was it archival purely? Or newsreel?
It was.
Here's what we're doing with the refugees.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, right. Yeah. And then I got other kind of material ultimately. We were looking all the time. Rod, my producer, and I had a couple of trips to Poland and made contact with the archival sort of institutions there. I had a great researcher. I had no idea whether I'd be able to get enough visual material from that part of the world to tell my story. So the backup was also a dramatised recreation. So.
Which you use sparingly, but you do use, yeah?
Yeah, where there were gaps or where, you know, I had to use them, I did use it. But in the end, I think the archival footage does tell that part of the story of the gulags and the exodus out.
You use it very, very well because it's illustrative in a dramatic way. You know, we're actually seeing people in action. We're not just being shown locations where things happen. You're using images where bodies are going and doing and telling the story that you're telling.
Yeah, well, most footage about World War II is the armies, the tanks, the bombs, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I concentrated on the civilian population. Yeah. I wanted to tell the story of the civilians. So I was looking for and told my researchers to look for images of what the civilians were going through during that time. So
the other sort of third of the film's structure is you actually going overseas, I guess, with a small crew, maybe just yourself, I'm not sure, and going on a bit of a voyage of discovery as well.
Yes, well, we had a lot of trouble raising money for the film. That's why it took so long.
How long did it take?
From 2008 till 2013, basically. We were struggling and trying to raise money.
To put too fine a point on it, but you were racing against time in a degree, which is your mother's life.
Exactly. I really had the wind up me. So because of that, we just took every opportunity that we could to film regardless. So a lot of the footage you see is shot by non-professional camera people, including my husband. The first time we went to and found my mother's village, Oleshov, which had been part of Poland but is now in Ukraine, I just handed a borrowed camera to him and said, shoot. And he's not a camera operator at all. But the choice was either nothing or have him recording whatever he could. And that's what happened time and time again. We just had to find people and stick a camera in their hands and ask for them to record it. So if anything, as a filmmaker, the one technical disappointment that I've got is that the production values aren't as high as I would have liked them to be. If I'd got a proper budget, I would have shot it completely differently. You just go with what you've got, basically.
But that's how it is. I mean, the technology is only ever as good as it is at any given time. And now you could shoot it on an iPhone, it would probably look better and blah, 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 blah. You know, that's changing every half hour.
Exactly.
By the time we leave this studio, there'll be better good quality camera out in the aisle. So why did it take so long? Did you have a lot of funding false starts?
We just could not get any interest in the story. I just thought this is a fabulous story, and in fact, I was discovering the story as I researched. I had grown up with all the family anecdotes, so I knew my mother had been sent to Siberia and all that kind of stuff, but I had no historical context. Firstly because I wasn't really that curious at the time, but the information wasn't there. Because this story was really suppressed from any kind of history books because of Stalin's relationship with the Allies. Once he joined the Allies during the war, the Allies knew exactly what he was doing, but it was politically incorrect to call him a monster as well as Hitler because he was on our side. So all his atrocities were basically ignored. And then after the war, the Cold War happened and, you know, the story got lost in the mists of time, basically. And I also found an organization called the Cressy Siberia Foundation that had been created in the early 2000s to record and remember and research, I think is their sort of mantra.
Record, remember, research.
Yes. Created for the Poles who had been, families who had been sent to Siberia, and try to find those families and get documentations. And there's a virtual museum on the website now. Mm-hmm. So once I found that organization, that whole world opened up, and then I found this, the historical story. I had no idea of the scale, for instance, that almost 2 million people had been deported. And on one day alone, 250,000 Poles were put on trains in different parts of eastern Poland and deported all over Siberia. That's the scale of it.
Everything so, about what that part of the world used to be was outsized, wasn't it? Like the amount of Russian soldiers in World War II, everything was just ludicrous.
Exactly, exactly. So as I started discovering like the big historical epic story, I thought, I'm fascinated by this. Everyone will want to know this story. And then we started going to the funding bodies, the broadcasters, and got no interest. It was being viewed as, oh, yet another World War II story. We've done that. No one's interested. And we were just banging our heads against doors constantly, and going back and getting second knockbacks. And in the end, I applied for the third time to a particular fund at Screen Australia, the Signature Docs Fund, and finally got lucky at the end of 2012. So, you know, then our fortunes changed, but it took a long time. And in the meantime, we were also trying to just raise money privately. And we had one fundraiser that back in 2010, where we raised just enough money to employ Denise, our editor, to go through all this masses of footage that we'd shot to at least find what was good in it and get rid of the rubbish. Because up till that point, I'd just been shooting and shooting and shooting, and it was all, I had no idea what was in there. And with my mother's dementia as well, the stories had this circularity. So I don't know, I didn't know which bit was covered and which weren't. So when we finally got the money to get a rough cut, from that point on, I could see the narrative. I could see this incredible story. And I thought, now I'll be able to interest people. And we went back to the broadcasters and got the same response. You asked why it took so long. That's why.
And so here's my hypothesis. Tell me if this is right or wrong. The fact that you'd already, decades ago, started and failed to finish a documentary about your mother called Helen must have spurred you to make damn sure that you were going to finish this one.
Absolutely. I had no choice, CJ. I just could not.
Your mother would think you never finish films about, you always make films about me every 20 years or so and you never finish them.
Well, I had to finish it for her, but I also had to finish it for myself. Yeah. And I had to tell the story for all the other Poles. I felt as if I had a responsibility to tell the story.
Sophia Turkowicz's film, Once My Mother, opens on the 24th of July around Australia. Check it out. It's a lovely film that is both extremely intimate and also as huge as Russia in the Second World War. Sophia, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to CJ Johnson with Movieland. Like us on Facebook by finding the Movieland page and clicking the like button. Follow me on Twitter at CJ Sydney or at CJ Movieland. Read my written reviews, www.filmmafia.com.au, and subscribe to the podcast. Go to iTunes and find the Movieland podcast and subscribe for free. Thanks very much, and make sure you go to see a movie.